Over my many years here at UUCWC, the words surrounding our candles of fellowship have evolved, been refined, as we have learned more and grown in our understanding of the ways we wish to be in beloved community, both here and in the larger world. Words matter. We often say that Unitarian Universalism is a theology without a creed, yet these words do reflect our beliefs and our aspirations for the world as it should be. We light these candles to remind ourselves and our children of our work to create a world that is fair and caring. We strive to make the spaces we inhabit peace sites dedicated to promoting peace. We affirm the sacredness of sexuality and gender diversity. We honor all sexual orientations and gender identities, as well as people who have none, and deeply value each other's authenticity. We continue on our journey toward undoing prejudice, racism, and oppression, our journey as individuals, as a community, and as participants in the wider world. We understand disability as a culture, lived history, and embodied experience, and a product of disabling oppressions in society. We work to enable full access and interdependence in our faith community. We are given this one earth and seek to honor this truth by caring for our buildings, our grounds, and all places on this earth in ways that respect the interconnected web of all existence, of which we are but a part. In this spirit, we gather, looking toward the day when all people are inside the candle's warmth and light.
Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church at Washington Crossing Online. I'm Reverend Kim Wilcheski, minister of this congregation, and I'm so glad to welcome you into this time. If this is your first time with us this morning, a special welcome to you. No matter how we gather, we know that it is a brave thing to explore a community for the first time. I hope you'll recognize in this hour together that we are a congregation striving to create community, celebrate life, and change the world. If after this morning service you'd like to know more, please fill out a digital visitor's card. A link should be provided in the chat in just a moment. This is an opportunity for you to get to know more about us and for us to get to know as much as you'd like to share about yourself. You'll also find a link to some weekly invitations for connection and learning. On Tuesday nights at 7 p.m., we offer an informal program called Faith Forward, where members and friends and visitors alike connect by learning about one of our ministries. This week's presentation will be an opportunity to meet with the Council for Faith in Action, which is essentially a group of representatives from all of our social justice ministries. So if you wonder what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist in a justice-oriented way, this is a meeting to attend Tuesday night at 7 p.m. A reminder that if you are in need of closed captioning, it should be showing up on your screen right now. And if it's not, you can turn it on by looking at the bottom of your screen and clicking the square with the letters CC inside. If you click there and on the option show subtitle, it should show up. And if you don't wish to see the closed captioning and it is on your screen, just go to that same place and click hide subtitle. I want to take another moment more before we go deeper into our time together to lift up the 10 8th through 10th graders who finish their Our Whole Lives or OWL education this morning. They began this endeavor of learning within their faith community about bodies, orientation, consent, expression, and so much more back in September of 2019. And of course, they had to finish that work in a very different way than expected, online and within a pandemic. We are so proud of you for continuing this work and in this community. And we also lift up Scott Drew and Barbara Jensen, who are once again the amazing facilitators of this group and this incredibly important program. Congratulations to everyone. I want to thank our tech hosts, John Harvey and Michelle Zechner, who are behind the scenes, as well as MJ Hansen for making our time today possible. MJ, again, as well as Lori O'Neill, who create the videos and slides that you see each week, and Krista Olson, who is a beloved member and friend of this congregation, but also our musician for this morning. For all who gather, may you find in this time a word, song, or moment of silence that feeds some part of you, some need within you. Today would not be the same if you hadn't chosen to be here. Let's join together in singing our opening hymn, One More Step. Holly will place the words in the chat, and we will join Steve, who's in the sanctuary this morning.
Week, we light a chalice, a symbol of our faith, a beacon of hope, love, and justice. We join in this lighting in solidarity and community with hundreds of other Unitarian Universalists lighting chalices today in homes and in virtual services, reminding us that we are connected to one another and to a larger community of faith and love. If you have a chalice nearby, we invite you to light yours. If you are able, hold it up to your camera and switch to gallery view to see all of the chalices being lit today. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another. Coming into the invocation of this time, we invite you to consider this call to worship called Utopia by Wisława Szymborska. Island where all becomes clear, solid ground beneath your feet. The only roads are those that offer access. Bushes bend beneath the weight of proofs. The tree of valid supposition grows here with branches disentangled since time immemorial. The tree of understanding, dazzling, straight, and simple, sprouts by the spring called Now I Get It. The thicker the woods, the vaster the vista, the valley of obviously. If any doubts arise, the wind dispels them instantly. Echoes stir unsummoned and eagerly explain all the secrets of the world. On the right, a cave where meaning lies. On the left, the lake of deep conviction. Truth breaks from the bottom and bobs to the surface. Unshakable confidence towers over the valley. Its peak offers an excellent view of the essence of things. For all of its charms, the isolated island is uninhabited, and the faint footprints scattered on its beaches turn without exception to the sea, as if all you can do here is leave and plunge never to return into the depths, into unfathomable life.
When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love. When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love.
When I breathe in,
hello, everybody. Reverend Kim asked if we could jump in today for the story of all ages to fill in for Robin. So since I had been bragging so much about our family meetings, I figured that we could share them today with you. About 10 years ago, Natalie introduced the concept of having a family meeting at the end of every day that we called circle time, where we check in with each other to share the peaks and valleys of every day, things that made us happy, things that made us sad. And we incorporated that into our everyday lives and did it so often, things that I had never done growing up myself, that it became something in my mind that everyone does. And I would commonly talk to other people and say, like, well, I got to go because it's time for circle time. And it sounded totally rational for me. And everyone else would look at me like I'm nuts or more so than usual. And then about a year ago, or early in this school year, Nat introduced another type of meeting, which is more organizational. And now that the kids are really grown up, we can check in once a week about, in addition to this circle time meeting, once a week about things that we can do to plan for the coming week, reflect on the week that's passed and set goals for our coming week. And so two amazing ways to keep our family together. So I wanted all of us to speak more about it, or most of us. Daphne's off to the side observing today.
Hi.
You want to talk more about our family meeting?
Yes. So we start our meetings by just saying of what happened in the week, whether it was good, bad, just most important things and little things that happened in the week. And after that, we talk about our goal for the following week and how we can improve or do something that we haven't done, or just relax. It could be either one. Then we go on to just goals/rules that is going to happen in the week or the month. And we just go over them so that everyone understands them very clearly. Then we talk about agenda items, where if you want to purchase something in the week, you can tell our family now before just saying, oh, I'm going to buy this during the week. Or it could be something like, oh, we're going to have a new rule in this house. And instead of telling you a minute before so that you get punished, you can learn about it now.
Well said. Anything else?
I think that's it.
So I'll say that I started the family meetings. We usually do it Sundays before or after church. And I started it last September because I would get feedback from Jacob periodically that I was nagging. And so I was like, how can I be less of a nagger now that he is a teenager? And I was reading some books about being like a coach as a parent and like building our kids' frontal cortex. And so so I thought, well, how can I do that? How can I relay what I want to relay, but more of as a coach versus a nag? And the spring of last year was so hard in terms of remote learning, which I think is part of why I became a nag, is it just felt like things were out of control. And that was a way I could feel more in control. So the family meeting started that way. So Daphne usually lights our chalice when we start it. So we're kind of trying to bring some sacredness into it. And the kids don't go to church as much as they used to when we were in person. So it was a way for us to kind of bring some of that element into Sundays and like be intentional. So like who has appointments this week, who has soccer, when do we have meetings for church and other things, who's working late. And then also it's a great time to negotiate, like, okay, what's a non-gaming day this week? And the kids get to choose. And I think it was 2 weeks ago, Jacob came to the family meeting, which had been at 9 a.m. and said, my agenda item is I don't want family meetings at 9 a.m. on Sundays anymore. And so we talked about it and we agreed we'd do it over family dinner on Sunday at 5:30. And so last week was the first Sunday we did that and it was lovely. Like I got to go grocery shopping. Chris slept in till I think 9:57. Daphne, I don't know what she did, but she did something fun. And
somewhere.
And so it was like, oh, this is so great. Like, I'm so glad we have a place to talk about that. So, and if you haven't seen Daphne in a long time.
That is nice.
Here she is. Yay. Anyway, that's the story for all ages today.
Oh, now in peace, oh, now in peace, may the spirit of love surround you everywhere you may go.
Natalie, Chris, Jacob, and Daphne, thank you so much for sharing not only an opportunity to see you, all four of you, but to hear how it is that you're putting your Unitarian Universalism into practice and expanding outside of that. And just so everybody knows, I had asked Chris and Natalie to share today because what I have learned from their family circle time is that their kids have this equal voice, which is of course what you heard them say as well, which I link to being a very particular Unitarian Universalist value, that all four family members are participating in equal ways, and just sort of the beauty and sacredness of that lesson for all four of them. So thank you again, you four. The Unitarian Universalist minister, Victoria Safford, has many meditations, and in one of them, she writes about another author, Douglas Steer. He's a Quaker teacher, and you've heard me quote him or Victoria in the past. Douglas Steer asks this ancient question, who am I? And he brings up how it inevitably leads to a deeper one, which is, whose am I? Because there is no identity outside of relationship, he says. You can't be a person by yourself, he risks saying. To ask whose am I is to extend the question far beyond the little self-absorbed self and wonder who needs you, who loves you, to whom are you accountable, to whom do you answer, whose life is altered by your choices. with whose life, whose lives is your own, all bound up inextricably in obvious or invisible ways. I have another colleague who carries around 3 pictures in her jacket pocket at all times. The pictures are one of herself, one of her husband, and one of her child. She does this, she says, so as to wonder every day, what promises have I made these people? And they help her answer, who am I? Whose am I? This morning's time for intentional meditation and prayer invites us to consider these questions. Who am I? Whose am I? Not only for reflection, but as a way of calling those in, a circle of care, a cloud of witnesses, ancestors and beloveds still here. Whose pictures would you carry in your breast pocket? Can you say their name out loud and hear the shape and tone of their life being heard from your own? Can you feel how your heart, your mind, your stomach, your posture changes as you call these names into your mind? I'd like to invite you to turn to your chat and, as always, make sure that it's set to everyone. And before we get to the joys and sorrows that you or somebody you know may be holding, I'm going to first invite you to write the name, or maybe it's just the relationship, of someone to whom you are inextricably bound. Who are you? Whose are you? For those who have a hard time watching the chat go by so quickly, we see the names of those that we know in our community giving voice to partners and children, kids and grandkids, neighbors and friends, extension of family and friends. We are learning the names of those that we love, who they love. We are learning the names of those who we love, who are inextricably bound for many reasons, not just love. And as those names and relationships continue to come in, this is not only just for those who just participated, but again, open for everyone if you wish. Is there a joy or sorrow that someone in your life is navigating? Maybe it's one of those people that you just named in the chat. And as always, maybe this joy or sorrow or this name that you put in there, right? Because we are all accountable to ourselves. We're bound up with our own makeup. Maybe this someone is you. Maybe this is your joy or sorrow. So now, as we move from the names, I invite you to move to the joys and sorrows that they are holding, that they are navigating, that perhaps you are yourself. As always, I will do my best to speak what I read, and I will miss many, but they are all honored and I will be reviewing them in the week to come. We lift up that there is retirement on the horizon for some among us. There's a challenging cancer diagnosis in our midst. There's a celebration of connecting with family and friends. Susan Vigilante lifts up that she's seen her dad after a year. Concern for trying to find a job in this pandemic time. And Canadian friends facing another shutdown. There is loss of life and loss of memory, loss of relationship in our midst, and others are celebrating the continuation of anniversaries and birthdays, of seeing one another again after vaccines. There's an opportunity to reconnect with children after so much time, and we also lift up that in this time and in all times, there are mental health challenges that exist among all of us. The challenge of a physically exhausting job, and when more reunions are coming still. I'm going to stop reading them, but I'm encouraging you to continue placing more and more joy and sorrow, let them mingle in the chat as I offer just a few more words. Spirit of life, you are in and among all. Our deep sadness, as well as our greatest celebrations, accompanying, soothing, mingling, steadying. Language is limited, so as to not get confused, Spirit of life, you are neither person nor personified, but rather whatever it is that is exchanged when life calls for our attention and receives it, and we ourselves become truly a part of it, a part of life, part of the Spirit. Spirit of life, ground of our being, steadying of our hearts, let us give thanks for the interdependence of our lives and in turn make that truth a blessing. For all that was shared and all that remains in the quiet of our hearts, let us join now together to sing our hymn of affirmation, Spirit of Life.
Our reading today is by UU minister Alice Blair Wesley. We human beings are promising creatures. We can only do great and worthy things. Indeed, we can only survive when we make and keep promises of loyalty and faithfulness to the ways of love with others. For distinct and different as we are as individuals, we are also thoroughly social creatures. The options and choices we have as individuals are affected and affected by those of others. Our decisions and actions and inactions affect and affect many others. None of us can fulfill our promise as individuals without the faithfulness and loyalty of many others. We human beings are also promise-breaking creatures. We violate our covenants in petty, small ways and in tragic, disastrous ways. Whether we do so out of sheer forgetfulness or poorly ordered priorities or ignorance for motives we ourselves cannot admire, ill consequences are real for the whole interdependent web. We human beings, especially in a culture so complex as ours, are part of many communities. We need one, our freely covenanted church community, in which our purpose is to be reminded of and to take account of the promising character of human beings in the widest possible sense, that we may answer the summons, the call of all that is holy to live with authenticity and integrity and joy and resolve.
Thank you, Chris. So this morning, I hope you can already have a sense of the theme that I'm trying to get us all to leave this morning with, and that is one about mutuality, about how it is that we are together, how it is that our lives are interdependent and intermingle. And so to sort of drive this point home this morning, I want to spend a bit of time in story. You know that since last March, we have been telling the story of this pandemic, living the events we will one day tell our children as they play out. And I think while we can pretty easily rattle off the main events, we thought it would be 2 weeks, we grieved layers of losses. There has also been this subtext that isn't as easy to tell. And I think because it's a sub question that can't yet be answered, or because it would be like the characters in a really intense movie, breaking script right at the moment of the drama, turning to the camera to look at you and saying, wait a minute, what is this going to mean for me? Now, wouldn't that be something? If we could just pause for a moment, break from the trauma of this time and have someone flip to the last pages of our book and read to us those last paragraphs. Returning to work, to school, to church, to casual interactions took this much time and it felt like this particular way and it caused this much or little of therapy to make it feel right again. You know, I would guess, because I think I say it each week with both awe and holy wonder, that one story I am certain we will tell from this time is the ways in which this congregation, you, we, chose one another. We could flip to the back of the book, and I am certain that is still going to be true. Choose creative connection, chose faithful connection, chose salvation, whatever we could make that to mean, amidst so much loss, so much death. But when I think of that story, our story, the one that we have always made and are making still, at least in my mind, this isn't much of a change from the way this community has always been telling its story, making its story. It's just another bit of evidence for who you've always been. So thinking for this morning's message, it made me realize that I need to tell you something different, maybe a little bit of a surprise. So as I said, we know that we could flip to the end of this book, and I know that you will choose one another, but I actually know how that's going to shake out. I know what the formula is, all those pages and chapters, I know how they're going to read. So let me explain how I know this, and I need you to bear with me because I actually have to start way back in the 1600s. Okay, so you know, and if you don't, that's okay too, that our religious history begins all the way back with Jesus, but then we formally become a gathered body of shared intentions and organization pretty much here in the early formation of America. The story goes from faraway places across a mighty ocean, they came seeking new life, shaking loose the shackles of religious and social hierarchy. They felt the call of new possibilities, the call of the spirit. That's one way of starting the story. The way I like to start it actually is that it was about 30 or so families coming from England, each willing to risk this journey to an unknown continent, eventually squatting on land better understood as belonging to the Wampanoag tribe of Native Americans. It's 1637, and this little group has come for salvation, their own, but also the world's. They knew deep in their hearts that the ways of the spirit could never be confined by or channeled in the kind of hierarchy and dogma that they had left behind in Old England. And so they come to this strange place, hoping not just that the spirit would live among them, but also that they could be a model for the world, that their example would be so persuasive that others would follow suit. Now, here's something I only just learned. They had one significant problem in this endeavor. They were strangers. They didn't know each other, these 30 families, at all. Sure, they were all from England, and most of them were farmers, and they all had a very similar sense of religious calling, but really they knew nothing about one another, about their deeply held loyalties, their yearnings, or their regrets. So before they did what they had crossed the ocean to do, that is, before they formed a church, our religious ancestors, before they formed a church, they decided to get to know one another over dinners and in one another's homes, in public spaces and across neighborhoods. They came together once a week to talk. Sound familiar? From their own documents, it says that they met every Thursday afternoon to, quote, lovingly discourse and consult together and prepare for spiritual communion in a church society, that we might be further acquainted with the spiritual tempers and gifts of one another. Now, I don't know if that sounds familiar, but I'd be curious to know if that's how you describe what we do. You might be asking, what were they talking about in all of those meetings? How does that happen? Again, in their own words, these ancestors of ours said, for the subject of these disputes or conferences, diverse meetings at first were spent about questions as pertained to the just, peaceable, and comfortable proceeding in the civil society. They were basically asking, what would justice look like, and how could we make that so as a religious people in this new land? They talked not about Jesus Christ, though at this time they did profess him, nor the Bible, though they held it supreme, but they talked about peace and justice and the shared vision of a good life. Again, their vision was not just personal edification, but societal wholeness and health. And they saw these two things inseparable. The conversations, we know from these texts, were slow and steady. And though there were only 30 households, not so different than how this congregation began, they spent an entire year in conversation before they thought they might just be ready to begin what they had in mind all along. And here's where they came into their second challenge. After all this time, after all this risk, even after coming to know one another, and even after having the ritual of meeting weekly, they had to decide, they had to debate, they had to reconcile what they knew and what they imagined. Could they start this church at all? Not because they didn't have the energy, but they didn't know the answer. Could they start this church at all without the order of a bishop or some other clerical mandate? In other words, by what authority could they call themselves a church, they asked. Alice Blair Wesley, whose words we heard in the reading that Chris offered, tells us their answer. They decided their authority rested in one thing. And I want you to hear that again. They decided their authority rested in one thing, and that is their capacity to act out of genuine, deep religious love. Their authority came from their sense of reason, their personal experience, their own understanding of what is holy and worthy of supreme affection, and their desire to act in response to their own personal experiences of the Spirit. It was radical. It might not feel like it to you because we are their ancestors, but it was radical. And probably because they knew this, they were super serious in their vision. They could have just continued to meet up weekly, having those deep conversations and called that their church. But they knew that they needed something more if they were to achieve their dreams. And here's really where we come in all these hundreds of years later, with ancestors we aren't really sure if we want to claim, living our own story, having our own meaningful conversations week after week. Here's where we and they are inseparably threaded together. Here's how I know the last chapters of our book. Those early gatherers, they knew that personal and communal transformation, that surviving a new world, a changed we, just like us right now, that this was going to take more than just a bunch of people meeting up once a week to talk, no matter how meaningful those conversations might have been. No, they had to be held accountable to something. They had to be held accountable to one another, to the spirit of life, no matter the circumstances, no matter how hard the conversation, the work, the harm, the healing. And look, they could have done what would have been easiest. They could have said their shared belief would carry them through and created a creed just like everyone else ever had, and that that would be enough, but they didn't. To quote the Cambridge platform, the huge document journaling this time, the story that I've just told you, they sought a, quote, radically lay-led church gathered by mutual consent rather than mutual belief. They bound themselves by a covenant, by a promise to one another in a deep kind of loyalty that they said was a faithfulness that they believed would not only save their souls, but the soul of the world. This and next Sunday are my last with you for 12 weeks. I'm going to be stopping in for the annual meeting to give my portion of the staff report, but I won't have the opportunity to travel with you to the end of this congregational year or to launch the next. And when I return in late July, what we all know is that more people are going to be vaccinated. More people will be gathering in small pods and going even to large weddings. Some of you will meet this with joy and abandon, and others won't. Others will feel the way trauma quietly changes our bodies and in unexpected ways. And what we will all have to do, all of us, is learn how to navigate what may look on the outside like more of our old lives, but likely feel internally like a foreign, risky new land. And so I want you to remember something about the story of this time. This is why I'm talking about the Cambridge platform on my last two Sundays with you before I go on leave. I want you to remember that last March, when our church building closed and when all choices were stripped from us, quite literally for fear of death, and how I know I couldn't be with you because of my own loss, and you found yourselves without the symbol or expected form of leadership. You didn't ask, is there still a church? You didn't wait for some hierarchical authority to tell you what to do or how, because you knew, because you know that you are what you need. And not just some of you, not just the vaccinated among you, not just the ones who cast the same vision for the short term, but all of you, all of us is what's needed, hanging on to one another, practicing that deep religious loyalty, faithfulness, and accountability, which is just another way of saying when the world is breaking and the world is being remade, and when we get antsy or believe we are the ones who hold all the answers, I want you to remember to practice love, love accountable, the same kind of hanging on to one another, love that you gave each other a year ago and more. No, like I said at the start of this, I know you will. I believe you will. That won't be surprising to me when that is the case. This year has only been more evidence for the world to know who you've always been. I know this. You know this. But the truth is also that we will be tested again this summer and into the fall and likely well into the next few years. And though I said I know, how we travel from this crisis and into the new world, how or if we choose one another, remain accountable to one another, to our vision for the world, how or if we remain loyal to love, it actually does remain to be seen. I believe that you will continue to be tender, patient, creative, and generous with one another and yourselves, that you will express gratitude for the formal and informal leadership that is among us and that has been and continues to be steadfast in this time, that you will act with the great authority that is yours and yours to share generously among one another, which is to act with and in love. I believe you will continue to choose one another in promise and purpose, but only you can help write this into the story, into our legacy, restricted by so many things, but this choice is yours. So here's the last thing I'll say on this today. We have rightly discarded many aspects of our puritanical inheritance, but they did give us the free church, the power of choice. And as religious liberals, our theology and our practices are full of choices. The fundamental to them all is the one that says we choose to be together, not because we share belief or creed, but because we share a commitment to one another. In fact, the word heretic, the origin of that word in Greek, is one who chooses. This is our story, the one we've been given, the one we're making. So may it be radical. May it be heretical. May it be lifted up for the world to know how a promise to one another can carry us through. Amen.
One of the most powerful ways to create community of mutuality is through music. Here we do this through our choir, our instrumentalists, and vocalists. In other parts of our lives, we join bands and choruses and give our children piano and violin lessons to help shape the creative sides of our being. The heart and mind lessons we learn from music are beyond measure. And here we have a way to share the joys and immeasurable benefits of music through our financial affirmation. As always, 50% of the plate is designated for social justice causes and projects. One example is the Trenton Children's Chorus, founded over 30 years ago as a social justice organization, anchored by the belief that every child's voice has a place in the world. TCC serves Trenton's youth so that they are heard and have the opportunity to become courageous change makers and confident leaders of a more just world. TCC accomplishes its mission by providing choral music, education, performance opportunities, and a host of other programs, including summer music camp scholarships. You may use PayPal, e-banking, send a check through the mail directly to the church, or you may go to the UUCWC website, and Holly has just placed the website link into the chat. Please remember to identify what your pledge is for if you are using PayPal or sending a check through to the church. And also, contributions are in and done for our auction fundraiser together wherever we are. And there is something for everyone in this auction. The auction book is available on the church website for those who have not picked up a printed copy of the beautiful book. And the fun starts next weekend.
Krista and Steve, it is really fun to watch the two of you play together. Thank you both so much. My parting invitation to you is to let you know that last week, Robin Pugh, who is our Director of Faith Engagement, and a few of our lay leaders attended a workshop led by the UUA on reopening and religious education. And to start the conversation, the leaders of this workshop asked everyone, when you think about going back, who is on your heart? And then when imagining how you would reopen, when you sit down to make that plan, how will you care for that person in your reopening? Maybe you'll place a picture of them, even if only mentally, in your pocket as we move through this next season and into another unknown time. I'm wishing you peace. I'm wishing you health. May you find and remember that this is the day we are given. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Please join Steve and Krista again in singing our closing hymn, There's a River Flowing in My Soul. The words have been placed in the chat. Thank you.
Please, if you have a chalice lit at home, let's lift them up together and say the words found in the chat. We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These remain kindled until we meet again.